Welcome to Say What, a fresh look at old sayings, the podcast which explores the origins, meaning, and value of old sayings, familiar expressions, and adages. I'm Dave Ellingson, adventurer, author, educator, and seeker of wisdom. In the coming weeks, this podcast will have a new name, the Paddle Pilgrim Podcast. And we will explore adventures in life, relationships, and the human spirit. Today's guest in our series, The Magic of Music, is the well-known composer of hymns and songs and liturgical music, and I've even learned in the process, musicals, Marty Haugen. Welcome, Marty.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
We share a couple of important connections. We're both grads of Luther College, and we both have spent many wonderful days at Holden Village in the Cascade Mountains here in Washington State. And I'm sure those two pivotal places will find their way into your telling us about your musical journey. Share with us how you got started in music and some of the twists and turns and maybe even some of the detours along the way.
Well, David, I grew up in Minnesota, and I was raised in a small town in southern Minnesota, Wanamingo. And we had two churches, a Norwegian Lutheran church and a Swedish Lutheran church. So that pretty much formed me initially. Uh-huh. And my family was very musical. Music was part of our life. So the first time I ended up, I mean, I grew up hearing the hymns in our church, and we thought that we all sang four parts. When I look back on it, it wasn't exactly right, but we thought we were singing in four parts. But singing was essential. And so for me, congregational singing was the first experience I had of communities coming together and singing. And I thought it was very formative. In my childhood, I took piano lessons and guitar, taught myself guitar and did trombone and violin and organ and music theory for my teachers. So I never thought I was going to do music. And I went to Luther. I started out as a music major because I didn't know what else to do. And at the end of my freshman year, my advisor said, I said, I'm dropping my music major. And he said, why? I said, because I can only be a performer and I don't have the discipline. Or I could be a teacher and I don't have the patience. Or I could be a church music director and I sure don't want to be a church music director. Because I thought it was just organ.
Yeah.
And I came to find out that people in churches make music in all kinds of ways. Yeah. And I have never been, I didn't make any of the choirs at Luther. I have a friend, John Bell, who's a Scottish composer, musician, and he said it's good actually to not have the best voice when you do church music, because you can encourage other people to say, you can help me here.
Uh-huh.
So I've always seen it as not as a performing art for me. It's always been about how do I help other people to sing, and that's always been the guiding principle for me.
Well, and one of the things over the years as I've gotten to know your music is what I would say the singability of it, that you're able to take beautiful, I think, melodies and tunes that are not on complex, but they're very singable. And I think that's one of the things, as I talk with people who know and love your compositions, they feel like, you know, everybody can join in.
Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? I mean, it was part of my Protestant upbringing is that you sing the word and you remember it more deeply, and you want to put it on the lips and in the hearts eventually of the people who come every week or want to have something to sing in the deepest moments of their lives, and you have to make it singable. And it's almost an asset that I haven't got the greatest voice that I can write, that I have to be able to sing.
Marty, tell us about this first piece you're going to play live for us at your keyboard.
Shepherd Me, O God was written during the year that my family spent at Holden Village, the winter from September to June of 85-86. And it was a commission to write something on the 23rd Psalm. And I did not want to take it on because everybody's written the 23rd Psalm. And my wife finally said, why don't you make shepherd a verb? And that was the breakthrough point for me.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Shepherd me, O God. Looking forward to hearing it. Well, Marty, I'm finding that amazing. The inspiration came from your wife's suggestion to make shepherd a verb.
Well, we didn't know any shepherds. And I didn't know what shepherds did, so but
well,
I understood the verb.
Well, you captured that spirit wonderfully. Thank you for that. Well, you know, when I was at Luther, I wasn't a music major. I was fortunate to sing in the Nordic choir, but I was a classical languages and English major. And so as a languages person, a wordsmith, if you will, and my mom was an English teacher, the other piece that I've always appreciated about your music, and I'd love to hear your kind of thoughts on this, is the poetry, the lyrics, again, the simplicity and yet the depth. I mean, clearly I often say to people, if you want to hear sound theology, if you want to grasp some of the depths in clear and simple ways, I think Marty's lyrics say deep things in ways that people will remember, like grafted onto their hearts, like you talk about. What's the process for you in terms of composition around lyrics and music? I think people would be curious to know some of what you do and what you've learned.
Well, I've certainly made a lot of missteps, and I hear about them all the time from people when my theology is run astray. But the closer I can adhere to Scripture, the safer I am, and that's why I think I've come back to the Psalms over and over again, because as Bonhoeffer said, this is the prayer book of the Bible, and you can hear the music in them. And you can sing each psalm 50 different ways. And as Paul Simon might say, you can find meaning in each different way you sing.
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah. No, and then I think as I get older, I think writing music is easy. Writing tunes is not hard. Writing words is very hard. Because if you're going to ask other people to sing these words, you're asking them to take them into their heart. And that's like giving a sermon. That's pretty serious business, I think.
Indeed. Which comes first? I'm curious.
Always the words.
Always the words. Okay.
Yes, because, I mean, other people, I know people work differently. But I need the words tell me where the music wants to go.
Ah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I like to write poetry, and often the poetry suggests images, and those can be musical notes almost. And I'm a visual person, so.
When you read a good poet, you know, like Mary Oliver or... Yeah. Maya Angelou or one of those poets, you can always hear the music rising up out of the words.
Indeed. I think of Mary Oliver's, one of my favorites. It's kind of a maxim for me from, I think it was from Springtime, where she says, instructions for living, pay attention, be astonished, and tell about it. That feels to me like what a wonderful mission for all of us. But I would think as a musician and as an artist, that would be kind of a motto that you could live by as well, right?
I was talking to a friend recently, a colleague who writes music, and I said, it's getting too hard to write words because I offend somebody no matter what I write. And my friend said, why don't you just write music without words? I said, I don't know how to do that.
Well, let me push that a little further. And another part of what I love about your music is that you weave into your music those challenging things, not just the hard things in life, but the themes of justice. You know, I love a line. I'm looking here in your Holden Vespers, Holden Evening Prayer. Whenever I sing this, and I've sung it at Holden, I've sung it in my own home congregation, in the third stanza, you say, you who made the heaven splendor, every dancing star of night, make us shine with gentle justice. Let us each reflect your light. Now, if you got in trouble for that, that's another person's problem, as far as I'm concerned. But that, I think you're.
I don't need to take the credit or the blame for that line.
Okay.
Because Holden Evening Prayer was written during our time at Holden that winter, and it was what I would call not an intentional community, but an unintentional community that people were thrown into this winter, and they're going through it right now. I've heard from the people there. You don't choose who you're living with, just like Christianity has always been, or any religion or any community. And they said, we want a new evening prayer. Would you write one? And I said, well, we'll try it. So we'd sing it every night, and there was all this snow outside, so we'd have to go out after. You couldn't go out after Vespers, so you'd sit around and critique it as a congregation that would just sit there and tell you what was wrong. They said, you got to include next year's theme, and the theme for the next summer was gentle justice. And you said, you got to put the word in there. So I don't take credit or blame for those words.
Okay.
That was the theme of the community.
You're...
But I think, in the best sense of the word, stuff that works is written from inside of a community, with the community, for the community.
Yeah.
And that line was, I don't know who came up with that line, but it wasn't me.
Well, it always touches me when I get to that. And I think your music, whether this particular piece, those themes of justice are always there, because the scriptures, it's at the heart of the Hebrew scriptures, it's the heart of Jesus' teaching. I think when you think of gentle justice, I think of Micah 6:8. Do justice, love mercy. Well, that's gentle justice, isn't it? I mean, we need to do that hard work of justice making, but how do we do it with mercy and with humility, right? Walking humbly. That's a paradoxical and profound message that we need to hear, especially today.
Well, that, you know, part of the fortunate and the blessing for me of my journey was I started out profoundly Lutheran and went to Luther College. Then I went to England for a year. I took a year off at Thorpe Hall. And while I was there, I did volunteer work on occasional Sundays at the Anglican Church. Mm-hmm. And when I came back in 73, I worked for 15 years in a Catholic church at a time when they were trying to wrestle with how to sing the worship in English. Mm-hmm. And now my wife and I and our family belong to a UCC church. So I've had this ecumenical journey, and it's got its good and its bad side. It's what the good thing for me is I've got to experience the breadth of Christian worship, and to some degree other interfaith worship as well. It also makes me get in trouble with each denomination when you say things that don't work well with the denominations.
Well, I think
that's part of the journey.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I know people want to hear some more of your music, and we have several pieces that you're going to share. The first, I believe, is maybe one of, in terms of the lyrics or the text, or at least the inspiration for the text, comes from, again, Holden Evening Prayer that I was quoting from earlier. Joyous Light of Heavenly Glory comes from, I mean, I was a classics major, so I have to show off for a second. Phos Hilaron, which is the Greek, about the light, you know, and how Jesus Christ is the light of the world. And you sing us into that. So set us up a little bit for this. And again, how this came to you at Holden, because that was that fateful winter, right?
Yeah, and they wanted a Vespers. They said, write language that we can all sing. And there was... it ranged the whole spectrum from the most conservative, the most liberal people. And so we wrestled with this text over and over again. Interestingly enough, here's my unauthorized opinion of this, that evening prayer, Vespers, began with a hymn for lighting the candles. Because in most of human history, when Christians were praying, it got dark. And they had to sing a hymn. So it was very practical reasons. They would sing this hymn while they were lighting the candles. And I think that made complete sense to me, that they would sing, first they would sing the hymn of light, then they would do the scriptures, and the Psalms, and then at the end they would offer the prayers. And it's a very logical progression. So I think post-Hillel was a time when somebody was walking around lighting the candles so everybody could see.
Well, let's
But
listen to a wonderful rendition of this where you have added some wonderful sounds and music along the instruments along with the actual text of Joyous Light.
Jesus Christ, you are the light of the world.
No light, no darkness can overcome.
Stay with us now, for it is evening,
and the day is almost over.
Let your light scatter the darkness,
and shine within your people here.
Well, this one is imprinted upon my heart. I can sing it all. I will spare you at the moment. But I think countless, not just Lutherans, but Catholics and UCC and Christians and others can sing this because it, you know, you never would have imagined how popular, in a sense, this.
No, it was when it was called Vespers 86 because we thought it would not last past 1986. And I have gotten from people translations into Korean and Finnish and German and Norwegian. It totally surprised me.
Yeah, and I remember a lot of churches. I worked with youth in many places, and this was called a contemporary service because it was new and it was different. And many people, I mean, I think we all love it, but people don't realize how long ago it was written. And you know, I guess contemporary is in the eyes of or the ears of the
Well,
beholder.
when it was first written about 1987 or 88, I was in a workshop and I was in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, which is a pretty conservative area. And the bishop said, "This is way too radical because you mentioned Abraham and Sarah and you shouldn't do that in the Magnificat." And then I was in California and said, "This is so passé. We're way past this." It all depends on where you're standing.
Indeed, indeed. Well, this next piece, is a very different sound. I had not heard this before. It's based on another psalm, I believe Psalm 34, and a very famous phrase, which we often just hear, the phrase taste and see. And there are many taste and see versions out there, but I love this because it, I believe, was a part of a musical you wrote, and it's really a gospel piece. Tell us about the process on this one and what led to this piece.
I wanted to do a reflection on, well, I was, it doesn't compare in any way, but I was inspired by Bernstein's Mass. And I thought, a reflection on the shape of worship and what happens and how we think about that. And what I loved about this is the image, two different senses, taste and see. I just think that's fascinating. About being totally involved in the moment. You're tasting and you're seeing, not necessarily with your physical eyes, but I just thought that was a beautiful image of that song.
Well, let's listen to the sounds of those senses of tasting and seeing.
Oh, taste, taste and see. The goodness of God, the blessings of God. Oh, taste, taste and see. The goodness of God, the blessings of God.
I will sing God's praises all the days that I shall live. My soul will glory in my God. The lowly will hear and be glad. Oh, glorify God's name with me. Together let us rejoice.
Oh, taste, taste and see.
Oh,
Being a liturgical wonk, if you will, I've always loved liturgy. I was involved in a lot of drama in high school, and I think our liturgy is the great drama, the great story. And, you know, adding music and visuals and a meal, I mean, talk about a wonderful, wonderful drama. That song had me tapping my toes, and I love the feeling, as it's like a large crescendo. It starts off simply and just grows and grows and grows. So thank you.
Well, I got to work with some of the greatest people, Joe Carter and Pamela Warwick Smith, the soloists. Were, when I can get out of the way and say somebody else can sing this, it was great for me.
Well, it was wonderful. Thank you. Now, Wanamingo, Minnesota, that's farming country, I think, right? Mm-hmm. That's not far from Decorah, where my ancestors settled in the 1850s and farmed. And this next song, whenever I sing it, I think of springtime. You know, it's a lovely, lovely piece that captures for me growth as the grains of wheat, and is really part of the Eucharistic part, the Lord's Supper, the meal. Tell us about how this came to you.
Well, after we did Holy Evening Prayer, I was contacted by three of the campus pastors at Pacific Lutheran. It was Martin Wells and Susan Brill and Dan Erlander. And they said, would you write an alternative communion setting for the community at PLU, Pacific Lutheran University, and so they could explore language, and that was what it was about. And when we came to the part about bringing the gifts up to the table, I went back to the Didache, which is one of the oldest, well, it may be the oldest example of Christian worship outside of Scripture, from about 90, the year 90, and it says, as the grains of wheat once scattered on the hills were gathered in together to become our bread. And I thought, what a beautiful image. Gather your people the same way. And I like the idea of the playing off the body as the bread, as the body of Christ gathered. And so that's where the image came from. It's a beautiful reading. If anybody wants to go look at the Didache, it's worth looking at.
So let's hear and sing along with As the Grains of Wheat.
As the grains of wheat once scattered on the hill were gathered into one to become our into one in you. As this cup of blessing is shared within our midst, may we share the presence of your love. As the grains of wheat once scattered on the hill were gathered into a foretaste of all that is to come.
I got to tell you, Marty, I have five kids. They're all adults now, but my oldest, Eric, who is about to become a father, I remember coming out of...
Is this your first grandchild?
No, I've actually got four others. And but this is the latest, this is the first in that couple. But I remember Eric, after singing Now the Feast and Celebration, which is that liturgy, I remember him he was maybe 4 or 5 years old. And I hear, and he was singing in the children's choir at church, so he loved to sing. But I remember him, I think he was in the bathroom probably, which is a great place for acoustics, right? And I would hear this little voice, as the grains of wheat once scattered. And I thought, that is the most beautiful sound to pass along to our children. And that has lived on in him and lived on in many. So thanks for that that wonderful piece. The last piece that is a sort of a pre-recorded piece, if you will, has another connection with our Luther College common ground back there. Tell us about how this came to be. It's a wonderful, wonderful song, and quite different than the others we've heard.
You're talking about Sola Deo Gloria?
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the motto of Luther College, but for the last 2 years I was at Luther, I was in the band with Weston Noble when he was still conducting. Mm-hmm. And Weston would say, when we played in perfect harmony, you could hear something above us. And it was, I don't think playing in a band is normally a spiritual experience, but that was sort of what it was like to work with Weston Noble. And if you were in the choir, you knew it. Were you in the choir with Weston?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Oh, that was always that way. And then for the 75th anniversary, I think, of Weston's birthday, and the 50th anniversary maybe of him working at Luther, I wrote the hymn for him. And in 2017, I was able to come back to Luther, and Andrew Last conducted it. And what a wonderful, inspirational experience it was to work with him. He was so good with that choir. I think there's a difference between a performance choir and a pastoral choir, and he really got it, and it was wonderful. And it was what Bach would often write at the end of his compositions. And I think it's the difference between writing performance music or music for people to sing. I've never see myself as a performer. I've always written, or almost always written, with the idea that this is music to be a service for others. And that was the inspiration for me for this.
And the actual song, even though you take that line, which is the refrain, Soli Deo Gloria, which means to God alone the glory, the motto of Luther College, the song is actually called O God of Blessing, and the refrain keeps repeating that over and over again. And you've added some instrumentation, some brass, and some wonderful sounds. So let's listen to O God of Blessing.
Thank you.
Marty, that is just such a great hymn. It captures the theme of to God alone the glory, but it really starts with that, oh God of blessing, that we're responding with thank you or with praise to God for blessing us, that all of life is a blessing. And two stanzas stand out for me that I'm actually going to read, because they talk about, I think, the gift of music. They're stanzas 3 and 5. Here they are. All praise for music, deep gift profound, through hands and voices in holy sound, the Psalms of David and Mary's praise in wordless splendor and lyric phrase. With all creation, one song we raise, Soli Deo Gloria. And then, I love this. This is, in much of your music, you love to crescendo to kind of the, I think, what I would call the cosmic dimension. And here it is. A billion voices in one great song, now soft and gentle, now deep and strong, in every culture and style and key. From hill and valley, with sky and sea, with Christ, we praise you eternally. Soli Deo Gloria. What a capper. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'll say two things. I actually researched to make sure there were a billion Christians at that time. A lot of other faithful people of other traditions. And the other thing is verse 4, I have to give complete credit to Mike Blair, who was the campus pastor at Luther College at that time, who said, here's how you say all praise for Jesus. And he pretty much wrote that verse. So he can take credit.
And he's a wonderful musician in his own right, is just retired and is working with seniors, I believe. And I've heard him and his wife sing a number of times. So that mm-hmm. gift of music is something at the heart of the Luther College experience and the Lutheran choral tradition. We've been blessed in our tradition to have great music, and you have contributed in wonderful ways. Your last piece that you're going to take us out with, you're going to play, I believe, on the guitar. And it is a very apropos song, I think, to a time of pandemic. In fact, in my congregation here in the Seattle area yesterday, we sang this, or our music leader sang it, and we from our homes sang it. And it's Healer of Our Every Ill. Looking forward to singing it. And I think this in many ways is a wonderful meditation, even an anthem for our time.
Healer of Our Every Ill was written in January of 1986. And when we were at Holden at that time, there was very little connection with the outside world. And in the middle of January, I forget the exact date, the Challenger space shuttle blew up. And it was, for people who were alive at that time and old enough, that's a very seminal memory. But we didn't know about it for about 2 or 3 days because we didn't have communication. Mm. And when we heard about it, the community was trying to figure out some way to process this. And this was a song written for that evening when we were gathering and not fully connected to the outside world, just like Holden is now during the pandemic when they have very little contact. But it was a way to try and say, here's how we are connected to a larger world in suffering.
So, Healer of Our Every Ill.
Sadness, grace us with your peace.
peace and gladness, Spirit of all comfort, fill our hearts. Healer of our every ill, light of each tomorrow, give us peace beyond our fear and hope beyond our sorrow. You who know each thought and feeling, teach us all your way of healing. Spirit of compassion, fill each heart. Healer of our every ill, light of each tomorrow, give us peace beyond our fear and hope beyond our sorrow. Give us strength to love each other, every sister, every brother. Spirit of all kindness, be our guide. Healer of our every ill, light of each tomorrow, give us peace beyond our fear and hope beyond our
I have a feeling that song is going to be playing in my heart and spirit through this day. And thank you for, even though written long ago about a different situation in many ways, a timeless piece that speaks to me.
Pain and sorrow and the need for healing is pretty timeless.
That is true indeed, true indeed. As a way of closing, what advice do you have for young musicians or young composers? What wisdom would you share as you think back over your musical journey?
What moved me and helped me, not even consciously at the time, you don't know when it's happening, but immerse yourself in life, immerse yourself in people's stories, not only those who are like you, but especially those who aren't like you, different cultures, different traditions, different faith traditions, and say, how are they speaking to us? Especially in times like this, I think it's so important. There's such a lack, I think, of listening and civility in our times. We need to listen to each other, hear each other's songs and stories, and how do we incorporate that? Music is always there. You just need to be open to listening for it.
And how can folks avail themselves of your your music, you as a resource person? I know during the pandemic, things are somewhat limited, and I'm not sure how even available you are. I know I've been to workshops that you've led and, of course, use your music. How can people be in touch and find ways to use what you've produced?
I've looked at the pandemic at a time of an age where I think I'd like to be helpful to others. I've had a couple people contact me and say, can I send you songs not to get published, but just for critique? And I would like to be available to people who might want advice or feedback or just suggestions about how you could be open. I'm quite open to that. I think I'd like to be, I'm at an age where I'd like to be a mentor if I can be, if that makes sense.
It does. And how would they contact you if they if they have a piece they'd like to share or have questions?
MartyHogan@mac.com.
Very good. Very good. Marty, this has been a delight. Thank you for gracing our worship with your music, with your words. I think of the liturgy, gracing our table with your presence and giving us a foretaste of the feast to come. Thank you so much, my friend. Blessings to you. And we look forward to singing your music and singing with you. You've been a great gift to us all.
Good luck with the whole project, David, the podcast.
Thanks, Marty. Until next time, I'm Dave Ellingson, and this has been Say What? A Fresh Look at Old Sayings, the podcast which explores the origins, meaning, and value of old sayings, familiar expressions, and adages. Tune in to Say What on your mobile device, computer, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. In coming episodes of my series, The Magic of Music, join me for jazz and blues, world music, gospel, folk, classical, hip-hop, pop, and country. For more information about my books and films and availability for Zoom presentations, check out my website at dellingson.com. And thanks for listening.